abundance of Shlomo. My grandmother of blessed memory used to have this lovely expression, to do without. You wouldn't say that Shlomo was doing without. He had plenty. And you know, Ruthie was, I think, advocating very strongly for this idea that in the plenty, right, we have the Jewish people, ochlim v'shotim v'smeichim, but there doesn't seem to be some kind of a great spiritual movement that's, you know, being generated despite all of the wealth. And we were able to really chart out in detail the nuances of Shlomo's administrative state and how he was able to set up a system whereby there would be a very sophisticated balance between federalism, the different regions, and nationalism, the national cabinet, etc. But we haven't seen any indication of Shlomo sort of bringing the people closer to Hashem. Nothing like we find by Yehoshua, where the Navi tells us, "Vayavdu Yisrael as Hashem kol yimei Yehoshua, v'chol yimei hazakenim asher harichu yamim acharei Yehoshua." And as frankly we have with many of the Malchei Beis David, where there is extensive commentary about how they served Hashem and caused others to serve Hashem. And that is very telling. I mean, maybe the most specific manifestation of that is to review, what haven't we seen yet so far, even though this is clearly the reason that Shlomo has become king, even before he's born, this is his destiny. We haven't seen any evidence of Shlomo doing what? And again, Daniel has defended Shlomo on this score, but what is the great absence in terms of Shlomo's administrative priorities, right? This wasn't in the first 100 days. It doesn't sound like it was in the first Congress, you know. But what should have been his first agenda, his first priority?
First of all, can it be Enam Mukta Mumukha
Batama? Maybe. But the Ramban, you know, is not very fond of that.
That's the Ramban, yeah.
You know, so Rashi is a little bit more likely to say in Mukdam Muchar Batorah, but it's a little bit less likely, you know, sort of like, you know, telling the unfolding story of Shlomo. It's always possible. The Abravanel sometimes resorts to it, but what's missing? Let's just make sure that we're all on the same page. Because we may start to pivot there tonight, but what should we have seen by now? Yeah, Herb, go ahead.
I would think that a move to start the building of the temple.
Yeah. So Herb, what's going on? Has he forgotten why he's there in the first place?
He may have thought he needs all this in preparation for it, but I don't see the reason why.
Yeah. The question is a very serious one. One of the things that my mother has been expressing concern about over the week since we've started to really delve into Shlomo is to what extent the osher and the chavod, the great wealth and the great prestige, is sort of distracting from what ought to be his primary focus. Yeah, Herb, go ahead, please.
I have one other thought. Maybe the undertaking is so big, so serious, so deep, that it isn't easily started, because you don't know how to get there, and you don't know whether you've got the right approach to it.
I'm glad you said that. I was hoping somebody might say that. Because I do think in general that is, if not an excuse, an explanation as to, you know, why people who are supposed to, who are meant to be engaged in particular tasks don't do them. It's just hard to initiate. Herb, let me tell you what was bothering me so much about that and in trying to deeply contemplate this issue. I think that would be more sensible if we saw that Shlomo had a hard time undertaking massive projects. But the last two chapters have been, you know, very clear manifestations of his capacity to administrate and to organize extremely sophisticated bureaucracies, which I think concomitantly mitigates any exculpatory dimensions to, you know, your observation, which is a very good one. But it's not like he's incapable of administrating massive projects. Yeah, go ahead, Herb, please.
It's a different aspect. It's a different approach altogether. Running a bureaucracy takes talent, takes courage and ability, but building the temple is a spiritual undertaking and a need for a commitment that is radically different from running a state.
Herb, are you suggesting that Shlomo lacks the commitment spiritually?
No, I didn't say that. I said that he perhaps has to find it within himself to undertake a task that is so dramatically different than what has been done before. He doesn't even have an example of it beforehand. I mean, perhaps looking into myself, as a creative person, I know the concerns you have in starting out on a new task and the unwillingness, not unwillingness, and the unreadiness to even begin when you don't know where you're going to go.
Okay, so let's play this out. So what would it take? What would that, what you're calling the initiating step, what would that look like?
To me, it's a plunge. It is a willingness to go into areas that you haven't perhaps explored thoroughly before, but you trust yourself enough to know that something will come out of it.
Okay. So is it fair to say, Herb, that in your analysis, your reading of Shlomo, that it's a matter of like confidence, of self-confidence? He has to find that?
I would say spiritual confidence, yes.
Okay. This is all very fascinating. So let's take a look. Let's take a look at the psukim.
What about the pragmatic thing about how to build it? How does he know how to build it?
Okay. Good question. Now, there is a lot of evidence, especially in Divrei HaYamim, a little bit less so in Melachim, that David basically gave him the blueprints.
And David got it?
Well, David, you know, that's a good question. David had sort of laid the foundations. And, you know, in terms of the exact dimensions, it's not entirely clear that there isn't a consensus that Shlomo had to follow, like, a specific playbook. Like, for example, the dimensions of the Mikdash end up being different than the Mishkan. So he can do, you know, he could sort of look back. He could have, if he wanted to, you know, sort of look back and just copy Truma Tetzaveh Vayatol Pekudei, these parshios that we're in. Okay, so let me take a look here at these psukim. All right. So Herb, I'm very curious to see your reaction to this. Vayishlach Chiram Melech Tzor, king of Tyre, the king of Tzor, Chiram, sends a delegation, Esavadav el Shlomo, ki shama ki osoma ashchula melech, tachas avihu, ki ohev haya chiram le David, kol hayamim. So Chiram, as was common practice, send a delegation to Shlomo, you know, to sort of continue the goodwill. They're neighbors. Obviously, Hiram is due north in the Levanon. And he was an ally of David. Okay, so Shlomo's response. Vayishlach Shlomo el Chiram limor, ata yadata es David avi. All of a sudden we have the reappearance of that language that was so familiar from the earliest chapters of Sefer Melachim. David avi, David avi, David avi. Ki lo yachol livnos bayis l'shem Hashem elukav. He was not able to build the king's house, in God's house. Bipnei ha-melchama asher svavuhu, because he was always busy fighting wars. Ad teis Hashem osam tachas kapos raglai, until God handed over my father's enemies underneath my feet. V'atah hiniach Hashem elokai, it was my father's God, now it's my God. Li mi saviv, ein satan, ein pekara. There's domestic harmony, there's extrinsic harmony. V'inini omer livnos bayis l'shem Hashem elokai, kasher diber Hashem el David avi le'mor, bincha asher atein tachtach al kisecha, hu yivna bayis l'shmi. The son that I'm going to give you on the throne after you, he will build my house. V'atat savei, so now please, Chiram, give the order. V'yichrsu li arazim min halavanon. Ravanel has a very unorthodox pshat here, but I'm going to follow the simple reading. And please give me the cedars of Lebanon, right? And chop them down. You guys are experts. V'avadai yu im avadachan. I'm going to send people up there, you know, to help with the work. U'schar avadecha tein lach, I'll pay for it. Kechol asher tomar, anything that you know, basically stipulate, I'm willing to give anything. Ki ata yadata kein baru ish yodea lichros etzim katzidonim. Nobody does it like you guys do it. You guys are the world experts in this. Okay. So what did it take? All of a sudden, David Avi, David Avi, David Avi, it's all back. All of a sudden, Beis HaMikdash, Beis HaMikdash. Right? That's what I'm here for. What made the difference? Where did it come from? Effie, where did it come from? What got Shlomo back into that frame of mind?
Hiram.
Yeah. Thank you, Charlotte. He had to be reminded. It actually didn't come from inside of himself. Hiram, his father's ally, sends him a message that basically says, I was your father's friend, I'll be your friend. And he starts thinking about his father again. Here's what I think makes it even more, you know, compelling an argument. You know, as we've noted many times, and, you know, Ezra and Divrei Hayamim, Ezra's the author of Divrei Hayamim, you know, he's always giving a little bit more of a friendly presentation, you know, to David and Shlomo, etc. So here's the way he tells the story. This is from Divrei Yamin Beis. Okay. Vayishlach Shlomo el Chiram el Echtzor leimor, kasher asisim David avi, vatishlach lovarazim lifno bayis lasheves bo, just as you send cedars Lebanon to my father to build his own personal palace, hinei ani vone bayis l'shem Hashem elokai, I'm building, you know, this great Beis HaMikdash, lahakdish lo lahakti lefanav ketores, samim amarechas tamid ve'olos labokir l'arav l'shabasos l'chadash imod Hashem Eloheinu, li'olam zos l'yisrael v'abayis ha'sheni boda gadol, ki gadol Eloheinu mikol Elohim, and God is so great, umi atzer koach levnos l'abayis, ki ha'shamayim b'shvei ha'shamayim lo yichaklu. And anyway, you can't really even build a house for God because he can't be contained in all the heavens, umi ani asher evna l'abayis, and all of a sudden Shlomo is so modest, right, and who am I to do this? Kim lahakir lefanav, yatah shlach li'ish chacham, and send me somebody, you know, who's really talented, a Bezalel type figure, you know, etc., etc. Okay, so what's the critical difference here? How does Ezra tell the story, which I think, you know, just really reinforces our observation about Sefer Melachim? So in the Divrei Hayamim version, what's the story? Who sends the message? Who initiated contact?
Shlomo does.
Yeah. Right? Oh, you know, I'm building this great Beis HaMikdash, and who am I to do it? And anyway, you can't really build a Beis HaMikdash. It's a completely different presentation and one that puts things in a totally different light. But in Sefer Melachim, it wasn't Shlomo's initiative. And the plain meaning of the text is that, I don't want to say that he had forgotten, but that it wasn't at the top of his priority list. Then all of a sudden, his father's great friend contacts him, and he's, you know, reminded of his responsibility, and he, you know, asks for the Arzei Halavanon. Mom, go ahead. I saw you reacting. Go ahead. No? Okay. So, Herb, I'm fascinated to hear how you respond to this, because you were, you know, I thought very generous before. So it's a matter of...
Well, I don't know if I can contribute anything more weighty to the subject, but I think we all need a push sometimes.
Okay.
And this is clearly what's happening, the way we're understanding the story.
So
and
what
I
is...
I think that what I expressed as the reticence, the fear... may have been experiencing could be overdone, could be turned around by the presence of someone who said, come on, get off it, let's go and do it.
So let me ask an admittedly challenging question. I mean challenging intellectually, but challenging in terms of what it makes us contemplate. If our reading is correct, and it seems pretty straightforward, especially in light of the emendations that come up in Divrei Hayyavim, what does this tell us about Shlomo? What do we understand about Shlomo on this basis? And I admit it's pretty shocking, but I don't see any way around it. Mom, go ahead.
I think he's scared.
I think he's scared to build the Beis HaMikdash.
Yeah.
So how does Chiram getting in touch with him?
He pushes him. He reminds him. I think he just... It's an overwhelming task, and he...
Does Shlomo seem like the overwhelmed type? He's running this massive bureaucracy. You know, thousands and thousands of people are involved. It's incredible wealth. He's taking taxes and gifts from all the surrounding kings. He says to Hiram, yeah, my father, you know, he was besieged by war his whole life, so he couldn't do this, but, you know, God has put my enemies tachas kapos raglai, I'm stomping on them. Not the most, you know, Divrei Hayamim, you know, humble presentation here.
Which take is the right take? Is it Divrei Hayamim's take, or is it Melachim's take?
That's always a good question. Well, right now, we're learning Sefer Melachim, you know, so we're using Divrei Hayamim as the foil. The Abravanel spends every week, you know, I spend hours reading the Abravanel because, you know, he's trying very hard to, you know, reconcile these things. But I think it's always in a fascinating counterpoint, and it's always in the same direction that Divrei Hayamim gives you a much more positive take. So I'm going to come out and say it. I sense a little bit of reticence tonight, a long weekend. David, who is Shlomo's hero, right, in the beginning, there's been a drift. We could try to, you know, sugarcoat this, but that's not, I think, what's really going on. Shlomo has drifted. His priorities are changing. The wealth has changed him. And it's a sad truth, but the vision of the Beis HaMikdash, he had to sort of be brought back to that by Chira Melech Tzur. Let's not mince words here. And then, okay, David Avi, and you know, so give me the Arzei Halavanun, and you know, Shlomo is Chacham Mikol Ha'adam. He's the wisest person alive. What, he couldn't think of this on his own? They're his neighbors. Again, my central thesis to you in Sefer Melachim, and this I think is just another case in point, is that the conventional wisdom that Shlomo was, everything was going beautifully until he was older, and then, you know, he was corrupted by these wives, I think is simplistic, and I think it misses a lot that goes on along the way. This is something that my mother pointed out in the context of his killing Adoniyahu and Yoav, where he's supposed to be an Ish Shalom V'Sheket, and that's his destiny, and it's critical that he should do that because he has to build the Beis HaMikdash, and he doesn't seem to really, he doesn't seem to really be following that playbook, and he's not the one who's taking the initiative here. There's this, you know, three-parak gap where he's doing all kinds of other things. They might be good. They might be neutral. I don't know. You know, the administrative state and the bureaucracy and everything that we read about. And that's all fine. But it's not the Beis HaMikdash. You can't say it's that important. And he has to be reminded of his father by Chira Melech Tzur. Now we have to face that about Shlomo. And I think that there's a commentary here about how somebody, remember, he was identifying early in the Sefer very much with his father over his mother, right? He was not going to listen to his mother. And his father is, everything he does is for his father. And then all of a sudden, you know, he goes to Givon, and he asks for Chachma because he wants to be able to do the right thing by his father and by the people. And Hashem gives him Chachma, but he also gives him Moshe V'Chavod. And I see changes. I see drift. I see spiritual desiccation. I think we have to confront that. And I wish I could say that I was in agreement with some of those who have suggested he's just afraid to take on big tasks, but I don't see him as afraid to take on big tasks. He's doing very big things. I think it's a question of what his priorities are.
But it's like what your mother said a few weeks ago, like he was given Osher and Chavod as kind of like a test by Hashem. And had he not been given that, he could have kind of followed along in the path that was expected of him. And so that just makes it so much more complicated for him now.
No doubt.
That's what tripped him up.
No doubt. Life is filled with challenges, but we have to try to rise to those challenges. And Hashem gave him a serious challenge, and he was, I think, in certain respects, derelict. No, it's not too late. He can still build the Beis HaMikdash, and I think we're going to see a pivot here. But I think we have to acknowledge the fact that it took Chiram to sort of, you know, catalyze the enterprise over here. And again, that's a Melachim versus Divrei Hayamim issue. But you can't responsibly learn Sefer Melachim without, you know, making note of and really underscoring this point. It's a very, very significant drift in terms of his priorities, in terms of his connection with his father. And they're related. Okay, so let's see how Chiram responds, right? Shlomo, you know, now wants to make this deal. V'hi kishmo Chiram is divrei Shlomo, v'yismach mod. He's overjoyed. Right? Vayomer Baruch Hashem, Vayom Asher Nasan LeDavid Ben Chacham Al Amarav Azeh. The language is almost entirely the same as what we found in terms of the Givon story, right, where Shlomo had first asked for Chachma because who could judge Miu Chalish Boras Amah Kavid Azeh? It's almost verbatim. To me, what it really means is that the Navi is taking us back and saying, now Shlomo can get back to the Givon Shlomo. Right? And Chiram has been the catalyst for this. Vayishlach Chiram el Shlomo le'mor shamati sasher shalachte lai. Ani eses kol chavtzacha, I'm on board, ba'atzei arazim, and he'll throw in atzei broshim for good measure. Avadai yoridu min alabanon yama, v'ani asimei medovros ba'yam en amakom asher tishlach elai, v'dipatstim sham, v'atati sa v'atata ser chavtzi, la'teis lechem beisi. I'll make a deal, you'll provide, right? You Shlomo, everybody knows that you've got like this incredible amount of wealth and, you know, food for 60,000 on a daily basis, according to the Abravanel's calculations. So in return for all of these arzei halavanon, so you'll get, you'll take care of my, you know, food, grain, you know, the grain exports. So vayichiram natinli shlomo atzei arazim atzei broshim kol chavtzo. And then reciprocally, shlomo nasan lechiram esrim elef korachitim makoles So over a multi-year period, this was the deal that they had worked out. So again, the plan is the following, just in terms of logistics. I think it is kind of interesting, and I think there may even be a more substantive point here. So how are the Arzei Levanon going to make it down to Israel? They're going to be chopped down in the Lebanon. And then, anybody pick up on how exactly Chiram proposes to Shlomo, how they're going to, you know, you got to get the, you know, Arzei Levanon down to Israel. So what are they going to do?
Boats.
Well, not even boats, right? They're going to tie them together, float them down the Mediterranean. Yeah, they're going to float them down. They're going to tie these massive logs, and they'll, you know, it's a good way of doing it, right? So Chiram's even suggesting the mechanism. I think it's noteworthy that it's Chiram's suggestion and not Shlomo's. That is interesting, considering he's the, you know, Chacham Mikol Adam, he probably could have, you know, figured this one out. But the Arzei HaLevanon are going to be sent down via the Yam HaGadol, and they're going to be brought, of course, to Yerushalayim, from the ports of the Mediterranean. They'll be brought over land, and that's going to be the method here. I'd like to circle back to this in just a little bit, but let me continue on the Psukim. Which again give us the scale of the project, which is incredible. Vashem Nasam Chachma Lishlomo Kasher Diber Lo Vahi Shalom Ben Chiram Uvein Shlomo. So over and above just the relationship that Chiram had with David, now he establishes like an independent relationship with Shlomo. Vayichrasu Brishnehem Vayal HaMelech Shlomo Mas Mikol Yisrael. So now you have a public works project. Vahi Hamas Shloshim Elofish, 30,000. Vayishlachem Levanona, Aseres Alafim Bachodesh, Chalifos Chodesh, Yul Balevanon, Shtaim Chodeshim Bivesova, Adoniram Al Hamas. So we learned about Adoniram before. He was a member of Shlomo's cabinet. He was the finance minister, so he's in charge of this project. So basically, you have a rotation of 30,000 people. Let's call it Group A, Group B, Group C. Group A goes to Lebanon for Tishrei, and, B and C are home. And then in Cheshvan, Group B goes, and A rotates home, and C is still at home, and Kislev, Group C goes, and, A and B are home, and, the Davar is Choser, in that respect, again and again and again. And basically, have this, like, Milumim system where people are spending, 1 month at a time in Levanon. There are three groups, 30,000, so 10,000 per month, and that would be for a total of 4 months a year. And again, this is a massive number of people. You're talking about 30,000 people who are involved in this. Shlomo again is a very capable administrator, is able to manage this kind of thing. In even larger numbers, Vayil Shlomo Shivim Elef Nosei Sabal, there were 70,000 porters. Interestingly, Devar Yamin points out that these were all Gerim. The thinking is that these were the Givonim, the Nesinim. The Malbim has a very compelling point that these 70,000 actually would do the heavy lifting of bringing the Arzei HaLevanon from the port cities to Yerushalayim. That's kind of an arduous thing. You have to go up into the mountains. It's very labor-intensive kind of an activity. Okay, so there's 70,000 porters, Shmonim Alef Chotzev Bahar, and 80,000 people working in the quarries, so for a total of 150,000. Levan Visariat Zinid Savim Lishlamo Ashram Lachash, Shloshes Alafim Bushlosh Meos, there are 3,300 officers, and Divrei Yamim is 3,600, so the differential of 300 is a lot of literature surrounding that. Haruzim Ba'am Bosim Ba'am Lachah, Vagitzav HaMelech Vayasiu Avanim Gidolos, Avanim Yikaros Liyaseid Habayas, right? There's an enormous amount of work that's going into the quarry, and the rock works, and, you know, the Ravenel likes this idea that even the foundation, which isn't going to be visible to the eye, but even that was done with Avanim Yikaros, that it's not about what people see, but Shlomo wanted everything about the Beis HaMikdash to be, you know, of the, you know, Mahadran, Minam Mahadran, let's say, Avnei Gazis, Vayiv Salu, Bonei Shlomo, Vnei Chiram, Vahagivlim. The question is who these people are, but I guess maybe the primary theory is that they're people from Gaval who have special talents in, you know, this kind of artisan work. Vayachinu Hayitzim Bavanim, Livnos Habayis. Okay, end of chapter 5. They were the ones who did the work with the wood and with the stones to build the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so again, you have 30,000 people who are involved in the cutting down of the Arzei Levanon, 70,000 porters, 80,000 people working in the mountains, a total of 180,000 people. Right? Very, very extensive, you know, public works going on. And again, we don't put it past Shlomo because his administrative credentials are really, you know, beyond reproach. He's unprecedented as a manager and as an administrator. So again, just to circle back to the point, and I know some people, you know, maybe were a little bit more charitable. Once Hiram puts it on the agenda for Shlomo, you know, Shlomo has no problem drafting, you know, a mere 180,000 people to the task. And he has the infrastructure in place in terms of the cabinet members and the Nitzavim to easily get it done. So to me, that once again reinforces the point that the only reason it hadn't happened until now is because he didn't prioritize it. And it came from the outside. I don't see it any way around that. Okay, now, admittedly, it might have been better if Shlomo had been a little bit more internally motivated. But here we have the beginnings of the Beis HaMikdash. And let's talk about, I think, three polarities that we find and what the meaning of all this is. So in terms of the materials for the Beis HaMikdash, they come both from Israel and Chutz Laretz. In terms of the way that the materials are prepared, it involves both the Yam and the Yabasha. Right? They're taken from the forest, they're sent down the Mediterranean, they're brought back over the land. And I guess, you know, you have Yam and Yabasha, you have Eretz Yisrael, you have Chutz Laretz, and then you also have Yisrael Va'amim. You have Shlomo and Hiram, Jew and Gentile. So I think part of what we're being told is sort of the cosmic nature of the Beis HaMikdash. All peoples, Shlomo and Hiram as representatives, the whole world, Yam v'Yabasha, Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laretz. It's part of the idea of Kivesi Beis Tfila Yikarei L'chol Ha'amim. The Beis HaMikdash may be, you know, it is going to be in Amakom Asher Yivchar Hashem Shekein Shmo Sham in Yerushalayim, but you can already sort of see the universalist or cosmic elements that are inherent in its very foundations, in its very building. Right? I think that is important to underscore as well. So it came about maybe under suboptimal conditions, right? Maybe it would be better if Shlomo was a little bit more, self-propelling in terms of the Mikdash, but in the end, I think it does serve a very important purpose because it underscores, you know, how cosmic an enterprise the Beis HaMikdash actually is. Okay, So that's, you know, that's the text that we'll look at tonight. Okay, questions, comments, thoughts. We open it up.
Why would Shlomo be concerned about the size? He could either duplicate the Mishkan, or as the second base of Mikdash was built, it was built much smaller. Was there anything that he knew that he had to do a certain size?
You know, Effie, there seems to be a remarkable amount of flexibility there.
There's that wouldn't be his hesitation.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't think it was a question of that. And again, when it comes to scaling up, you know, the kind of infrastructure that's needed to do this kind of a project, right? It's there. He's good at that. He's very adroit, you know, administratively, bureaucratically. Charlotte.
I guess I feel that Shlomo was really blessed. First of all, he knew what his tough kid was, what his purpose was. That's really very rare and very fortunate. He also was given wisdom, honor, and wealth in order to fulfill his purpose. But he still needed help. And so Hashem sent him Hiram. So I think it's really a wonderful process to see in terms of what you yourself are given, what you do in terms of having free choice, and the help that you can have to help you, you know, do what you need to do.
Right. So that, I think, is a really interesting way of formulating it, is that, I guess, from Charlotte's point of view, this is sort of like, I think, a much more, in some sense, like a more optimistic reading of Shlomo, is that what Charlotte is basically saying is, look, you can know what you're supposed to do. You can have all of the basic elements that go into it, but, you know, everybody needs help. It always takes a village, right? And maybe that's the point, is that Shlomo has all of these advantages, but even he, you know, needed, you know, a push from the outside. So again, that would be a way of thinking about it, you know, in a way that doesn't necessarily bring any discredit to Shlomo for not being able to self-start on this. Okay, that I think is very valuable. Thank you, Charlotte. Okay, so just to sort of summarize and distill the basic thesis that I'm arguing for, obviously there are many different ways of thinking about these things, as we heard articulated tonight, is Shlomo now has an opportunity to hit the reset. As Charlotte just spoke about, he has the tafkid. In my estimation, he drifted from that, as he drifted from the legacy of his father, David Avi. But he has an opportunity now to really revisit that, to go back to Givon, as it were, his finest moment. And one of the things I think we're going to have to document is, how successful is that? Is he able to rediscover why he is on the throne to begin with, what his purpose is, as Charlotte spoke about so, you know, eloquently, his tafkid? Does he stay focused on that? How does the building of the Beis HaMikdash, which we're going to focus on very heavily now, you know, chapter 6, and this is going to occupy, you know, the lion's share, next four chapters, chapter 6, 7, 8, and 9. So how much is Shlomo able to stay focused on this? And that is an absolutely critical question. Because again, we're building up to, and everybody knows this, from the time we get to chapter 11 and we see things fall apart, we're going to have to ask the question is, you know, how much of this is sort of like a sudden and shocking disintegration, and how much of this is, you know, just more of the same, but worse, you know, a matter of degree. Okay, so that's something that we need to evaluate. So this is going to be one of the most critical sections in Tanakh that we're about to begin, God willing, next week, which is the building of the Beis HaMikdash itself, right? This is, in some sense, a moment that the entire world has been waiting for from Har Sinai through the Mishkan. You know, you have that 40-year delay, and then you have a 14-year sojourn in Gilgal, and 369 years in Shiloh, and 57 in Nov and Givo, and then finally we're going to get there, right? This is like, you know, it's been a long time coming. You know, almost 500 years since, you know, the Torah was first given, and the Kavod was always meant to go from Har Sinai to the Makom Asher Yivchar Hashem Shekein Shmo Sham. So it's a climactic moment. And Shlomo is the person who's going to do it. Right? Not Avram, not Yitzchak, not Yaakov, not Moshe, not Aaron, not David, but Shlomo. This is his role in Jewish history. This is his moment. For this, there's no question. You don't even have to say Umi Yodei Im Le'ez Kazos Higat L'Malchus. In Shlomo's case, it's not Umi Yodeya. It's Kulam Yodim. Everybody knows. This is his job. You know, David couldn't do it. He's supposed to do it. And we're going to have to evaluate a big part of Shlomo's legacy. Big part of his evaluation has to be the building of the Beis HaMikdash. So we started to, you know, talk about it tonight, especially the cause.